Thank you very much, and hope you're all doing well this morning. We're chugging through a lot of stuff here. It's been a great meeting. I want to thank the organizers, and but except for Joanna Leonidakis' talk on the first day, we really haven't heard much about extragalactic supernova remnants, especially beyond the local group. And I'm very pleased to be able to tell you about a great set of data sets we've been amassing on M83, which is about 4.6 megaparsecs away. Knox Long has a poster on X-ray properties of several galaxies in this sort of distance range beyond the local group that you might want to look at. And also the Crete group here, the Greece group, has a great poster on nearby galaxies as well that you might want to look at. Okay, there we go. So because I may run out of time, I wanted to hit you with the take-home points right up front. Oh, I missed my collaborators. There we go. The red ones in red are sort of my primary collaborators on what I'm talking about today. There are many collaborators on other aspects of the project that are listed here below. Thomas Russell was elevated because he's worked very hard to get the Atka radio data available so that I could at least show it here today. We only got it a little while ago and haven't really had time to integrate it into the most of the presentation, so I won't say too much about the radio. But here's the take-home points. Basically, as expected, because of the high supernova rate in M83, there's been at least six in the last century and probably seven. You would expect a lot of supernova remnants, and we did find a lot. In particular, with the WIFC-3, data from Hubble, we've been able to identify the small diameter ones because we can actually measure their sizes at this distance. And surprisingly, at least to me anyway, very few of the objects have a Cassé-like or an ejecta-dominated type optical character. I'll talk a little bit about some of the reasons for that if I get to it at the end. If not, you can ask me about it. And there may be some more young remnants that are hiding that we haven't found yet that will show up when we do spectroscopy. So just an overview of the data sets. We have Magellan ground-based imaging at many wavelengths. This is the main one that we have found most of the optical candidates with. Deep Chandra observation, 730 kiloseconds, that has been published. The young remnants have been published here in the Hubble data for more detail there, and we are following it up in the process with GMOS spectroscopy. We have about 100 of the objects right now that have spectra. And then we have the radio surveys coming along as well, and I'll at least try to mention the Atka survey here. So overviews of the data. So here's the optical Magellan data set. I'm showing here H-alpha and broadband to make a pretty picture here. Of course, what's really interesting for the supernova remnants is the sulfur 2 and O3 imaging relative to H-alpha. And then here's the spectacular data set from Chandra, 400-plus point sources. Of course, the starburst nucleus of the galaxy here is very bright in both. But in particular, I want you to notice the amount of diffuse X-ray emission. This is hot, diffuse gas in the spiral arms of M83, more diffuse emission than any other galaxy that I'm aware of, anyway. And I will use the same color coding where red is soft X-rays and going to blue for hard X-rays in the blowups, the enlargements that I'll be showing as we go through the talk. So here's how we find them in the optical. I mean, basically, you take O3, sulfur 2, H-alpha images, you subtract the stars. You take a ratio, and here's three objects that stand out very nicely in the sulfur 2 to H-alpha ratio, and so we say, aha, probably shock-heated. You can, in M83 anyway, you can play the same game with oxygen 3 to try to find the ejecta-dominated guys or find oxygen-strong nebulae anyway, and the same ratio technique shows certain things pop out, and this particular one does not have a lot of strong oxygen 3, these two do. So they, if you do a color composite, they kind of show up as bluish-white. Here's the green is the sulfur 2, so you can see that jumping out, even though that's projected against photoionized emission. So these things really jump out in these line diagnostics. Interestingly enough, going by here, here's a nice little point O3 source. If that had an X-ray source, aligned with it, we'd say that might be a Cas A candidate, but instead, mainly what we found with the O3 point sources are planetary nebulae in M83. So there's the distribution of the optical remnants that we have found on both of those data sets. As you can see, some of them scatter around, and some of them kind of align with spiral arms. All of them are embedded in this diffuse gas, X-ray gas, and probably are, over time, are responsible for energizing that gas. So we did find a lot of O3 strong nebulae. Most of them were normal supernova remnants. The other objects are either high excitation Wolf-Rayet nebulae or something like that. We have not really found the ejecta-dominated objects that we are expecting to find. I'm sorry that doesn't show up very well, but here's the radio data set from Otka that we've just gotten from our Australian collaborators. Again, here's the supernova remnants distributed on that, and the ones in white are the ones that show optical radio correspondence. And I'll just blow that up, part of the northern spiral arm, to show you here. This is the ground-based data now, but the ones in white here are the ones that apparently show radio emission detectable, and the ones in green are ones that that do not. And interestingly enough, SN57B, one of the historical remnants, is detected here in the radio. Okay, the X-ray data set. If we just look at all the point sources now, we have four different hardness ratio plots up here showing subsets of the data. Open circles are all the targets, and the outside D25, you see most of these are AGN. They're a little bit harder. Inside D25, we've got a whole range of hardness ratios. If we break them up into the ones that correspond to optical supernova remnants, you see they're mostly softer sources down here. And if we look at just down in the nucleus, and I'm not going to talk too much about the nucleus, but if you go down in there and dig around, you see the X-ray point sources in there. Actually, some of them are supernova remnants. Some of them are X-ray binaries. And this is the only slide I'll show on the nucleus. We're just zoomed right in on that bright nucleus now, and the ones in magenta correspond to optical supernova remnants we found with Hubble and a number of X-ray binaries in here as well. Very complex region there in the nucleus. That could be a whole separate talk. So the Hubble data set. This shows an overview of the seven fields of Hubble data that we took here. Again, I'm showing H-alpha and broad bands to make the pretty picture and show the field coverage, but it's really the emission line images that are of most interest. We can do some population analyses on the stars here as well with the broadband stuff, but with the iron 2 in the infrared, this turns out to be a very interesting diagnostic that you'll see in some of the plots as we go along. Now, one whiff pick pixel actually gets down to about the parsec level, so we're really getting down to the small diameter guys. And just a note in passing, if you're interested in this data set, we have the mosaic aligned astrometry corrected data set is available in the public as a high level science product at the MAST archive. You can just download this and play around with it yourself. Okay, so here's now just zooming into a little piece of the Hubble data, and then we've got Chandra here at lower right. Here in green are four of the optical ground-based candidates that we had found. And in the emission lines here, you see them stand out against the photoionized gas very nicely. Resolved shells here, partial shells and so forth. You can see this is kind of an oddball object, but that happens to be the one that is brightest in soft X-rays down here. But there's this other thing that shows up in iron, and they all show in iron 2 here very nicely. And here's this other nice bright source that shows up in iron 2 that is projected against the dark dust lane. We don't see any X-ray. We don't see really any optical evidence of it, but I'm convinced that that's a supernova remnant just like these guys, but it's behind the dust. So the iron 2 gives us a new diagnostic that kind of gets through some of the dustier or more complex situations that we encounter in these other galaxies as we go farther away. And we did find older remnants. Here's basically a Cygnus loop in M83. It stands out very nicely here, the shell. It actually is bright iron 2 as well. It is projected against dust there, but it must be kind of on the near side of the dust because the X-rays are still very soft here, so they haven't been absorbed away. And we have an optical spectrum of this guy, classic shock-heated spectrum, strong O3 relative to H-beta, strong O1, strong sulfur 2 to H alpha, and very strong nitrogen 2. This is an indication of the high general abundances in M83. We don't have spectra for everything, but that one we did. I want to talk about the young population now, if I can, for a few minutes. And of course, there's been a lot of historical supernovae in M83. The ones that have types are all known to be core collapse. I suspect these are as well, just from the environments where they're found. And then we found one interesting, probably missed supernova in the last 100 years here, an object that we found in our survey that no doubt is also a core collapse type remnant. So with this many historical supernovae in the last 100 years, there ought to be lots of young remnants, and indeed we have found those. I'm going to concentrate just for a minute on these two. These are both published, so I don't want to spend too much time of my time on those, but they're quite interesting objects. In this picture here, we have the Chandra data for a small region, and here's the Magellan ground-based data. This is SN1957D in the X-ray. You can see it's quite hard. Here's the Hubble data down here. From the stellar data, you can see there's some dust around, but basically it's not heavily extincted. So this harder spectrum, it's probably a Clarion or some kind of a hard source associated with this very young supernova remnant. In the Hubble data now, it's this blue dot, blue being the oxygen 3 in this picture, that makes it stand out. It tells you that it's probably ejecta-dominated, and indeed when you take the spectrum, you see this very broad, if you took an integrated spectrum of Cas A, it would look like this, right? It's got a very broad distribution of oxygen-emitting filaments, and we see the same thing here. And we've been following this for some 30 years now. The funny, interesting thing about this is that the scale has changed on the display here. We're down by a factor of 5 here. This big, broad oxygen 3 component is evolving away on a very short time scale, and that's very different than Cas-A, but it may provide a clue for what's going on here. Now, in the Hubble data, again, we've resolved out the stellar component here. We can do photometry on these stars. If you do color magnitude diagram fitting, you find it's a very young population, as you would guess just from the colors of these stars, less than 10 million years old, and the main sequence turnoff mass for this little cluster is greater than 17 solar masses. So that would seem to convince us that it really was a core collapse or type 2. Here's the other object I was just mentioning. We looked at it initially because we thought this was an extended supernova remnant, this faint extension down below, but it had this bright knot on the top part of the shell, and we thought that was just part of the same supernova remnant, number 174. Well, we called that 174A when we actually took a spectrum of it because it's actually a separate object. Changing scales here from here to here, this is 1 arc second, so this is Hubble data, stellar component around here. Here's the subtracted emission line images, and you can see it's actually present in all three of these bands. So we found it from the H-alpha to sulfur 2 emission, but if you look at the spectrum, we found it in H-alpha narrowband, sulfur 2 narrowband, because of this huge broad feature that is there from this very young old supernova or very young supernova remnant, depending on how you like to think about it. So we can constrain the size of this. It's essentially unresolved to Hubble or just barely resolved. Put an upper limit on the diameter. We have about 5,000 kilometer per second type widths on these lines. And so you can say it's very likely less than 100 years old, and it was just a supernova that was missed. The visual part of the supernova was not seen. This is just a quick hand wave at the color magnitude and color diagram fitting that we do to get the stellar populations. You correct the stellar populations in the top for reddening. They come back to the isochrones, and you see it's very young. You can't read the scale there. That's a very young isochrone. And again, just like 57D, we get a very similar, very young population for this object as well. And you can do that for more objects. So both of those objects that we just looked at, actually, if you look carefully, you can see that there is a stellar component that is still right at the supernova position. Down here, maybe you can see this a little better because it's not quite as confused around it there or whatever. There are many other objects that are like this, and it makes me think maybe we can get at binary companions, not with old supernovae, but with very young supernova remnants. These are by no means unique. These are some of the best examples, and they don't show up very well, but there's a little red source at the position of this one, a little blue source at the position of that one, quite a bright star at the position of this one, and so forth. So we can, and you can see the varying X-ray characteristics of some of these objects, partly due to absorption, probably, no doubt. But we can look at this issue of binarity, I think, actually, with this sample. Haven't yet, but I think we can. So we found 63 supernova remnant candidates that are less than 0.5 arc seconds, or about 10 or 11 parsecs. That's about the size of EO-102, the classic Cas-A cousin that is in the SMC that is still very much ejecta-dominated, even though it's 1,500 years old. We did find a lot of new objects with Hubble, as well as some of the known objects at optical that we have been able to measure their diameters to make this population. 32 of these have X-ray counterparts, but only three objects, two of them you've already seen, plus this object, have any relation to ejecta-dominated or Cas-A-like objects. This one is very close into the nucleus. This is the bright nucleus right here, right on the edge. These are Hubble data here now that resolve it out at ground-based resolution. This gets all lost, and haven't been able to get a spectrum of this guy yet. Here you can see the bright nucleus in the continuum image. Soft X-ray source there, strong oxygen emitter. The blue here is the O3. The red is actually H-alpha, so it has H-alpha, not sulfur 2. That's interesting, a little different than Cas-A. But basically, this is what we would look for. We would look for an oxygen-dominated nebula with sulfur 2, soft X-ray source, and that would be very good. I didn't see my earlier time flag there, so I'm actually very short on time, so I need to move along. So here's what a typical supernova, young supernova in M83 looks like. It's very compact. This one has only got a diameter of 5.3 parsecs, so it's just comparable to the size of Cas-A, strong soft X-ray source. And the spectrum looks exactly like the Cygnus loop, except for the fact that we have a high density indicated by the sulfur 2 lines and a small diameter. So what we see here are that these guys are evolving very quickly into the radiative stage. Now here's one that was just found with Hubble that we don't have a spectrum of yet. From the color in the emission line image here, you can see white means it's strong in all three bands. It's not dominated by O3. Soft X-ray source, iron 2 source. I'm sure, again, that this is basically like the other object we just saw. And there's many other examples, different stellar backgrounds here, but all compact objects. Again, varying X-ray characteristics, possibly depending a little bit on absorption. In this case, iron 2, where we have coverage, they show up. I could show you many more examples that are essentially identical to this. So my paradigm that I had in my head when we started this project was, you know, you have Cas-A, and these are the approximate relative sizes of these objects, okay? Cas-A would evolve into an EO-102, which is, you know, 13 parsecs in diameter, still ejecta-dominated. Even by the time you get to something like M132D, the green in here is the oxygen ejecta. You do have a shell around the outside, probably a cavity that was being struck now by the X-ray shock here, the blue. And as that evolves a little bit farther, you lose the optical emission here, and it looks like a bright radiative remnant like Cas-A. Okay? So that was my paradigm. And instead, in M83, we're getting bright Cygnus loops at the size of a Cas-A or a Crab Nebula. They're evolving very quickly into this phase. So the punchline here is that this unusually high, dense, high-pressure ISM is causing these things to evolve very quickly, and the question is, why is that happening? It may also have something to do with the high metallicity in M83. Here's just a quick comparison to M33, showing how the diameters are skewed to smaller values than M33. The luminosities are skewed toward higher values than in M33. Densities are skewed to lower values and to smaller diameters. The abundances in M83, if you didn't know, are very high. Here's the abundance gradient, but basically here's solar. So you can see it's super solar over the entire optical disk of the galaxy. And that would cause significant mass loss in the precursor stars because of the high metallicity, maybe the high pressure ISM. And the mass loss from the precursor that gets constrained right around the supernova site is what causes these things to evolve so quickly into radiative remnants. Here's a little peculiarity that that really shows up in M83, and I think it's actually showed up previously in other galaxies, and maybe we haven't realized it. These are H2 regions in M83, so a very flat nitrogen 2 to H alpha ratio with galactic radius. And the blue dots are the supernova remnants. There is huge scatter. This is not observational scatter. This is huge, real scatter in the nitrogen 2 to H alpha. Since nitrogen 2 to H alpha is primarily an abundance indicator, okay, at least within each subset, this is telling us, I think, that there's a lot of local enhancement of nitrogen at the sites of the supernova. So does that have something to do with the precursor systems, whether it's a single star or binary, that causes this, especially here now at small diameter, you can see that's where most of the spread is. It's not just that they're higher at small diameter, the spread is higher at small diameter, and I think it's local enhancement of the nitrogen from the precursor systems, not showing us really the abundance gradient per se in this galaxy. So I know I've run over time. I apologize for that. I didn't see the earlier flagger. I would have jumped ahead a little bit more. There's my summary again, and I thank you very much for your attention.
Well, thanks very much. I really need to apologize. We need to move on, so there is no time for a question. And can I ask everyone to talk to Bill if you have any questions, during the lunch break or morning tea? Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay.